terrific weekend, and it had it had everything, at least from our perspective, because we had big family function to deal with going into the weekend with the baby on hand, baby on board. A lot of fun. We had a really great time, and then had to, you know, kind of peel away from the family responsibilities. Made the big dinner Friday night, and actually ended up with one on Saturday as we were watching the second half of the cards. And then yesterday, spent the day at Saratoga, starting with Seth and I doing TV. We had a lot of fun, and I'm still very troubled by Seth not wearing a tie yesterday. I don't know. I hope it's not a trend. Summer casual. That's him, Mr. Summer Casual. And then spent the afternoon at the track. And I know that it's not, you know, it's not what it should be when it comes to attending the races. But the handful of owners that come in, the horsemen on hand, it at least provides glimpses, moments of familiarity, racetrack attendance familiarity. We ran in the fourth yesterday with Minute Mouse, ran very well, and she tried to Benji Hernandez, who came up the rail on Saturday in that nightcap upset. He tried the same exact thing up the hedge, and she just didn't have the last little punch. Got beat 2+ lengths, but made for a fun afternoon. Had friends, partners come up, the Caprio brothers, Joe and Michael. And in fact, I got to tell you about the book at some point. I got it. I don't see it on my desk. I didn't. It must be downstairs. One of our partners has written a book about their father, his exploits in World War II, based on 40+ letters that went back and forth. And it looks quite remarkable. His father, part of the one of the greatest fighting units in American military history. And I want to tell you about it. I want to read a little bit of it, too. So that was cool. But there was countless moments, actually, that really felt like a racetrack, including shakes. The shake, instead of being in the racing office, it's actually out at the table where we broadcast from when we're at the track. And so that, you know, that's one of those familiar scenes. And of course, speaking of claims, part of the weekend, I mean, there was just something going on, it seemed, every day somewhere, including particularly at Saratoga, where there was some wild, you know, big prices and fascinating, you know, sets of circumstances, including that race Friday particularly was wild. You had a race where all 8 horses in the race were claimed. And I haven't seen anybody say that they can recall that happening to that level. I mean, you might have a big field and a bunch of them get claimed, but every horse in the race changed hands. How about yesterday when you had the 1-2 finish of the half brothers? We love when that happens. That's one of those, you know, one of those really entertaining elements that you get. And it always makes me think of the Del Carroll, the family of horses. Our friend Thanassi, they had there were their 3 brothers that were all running at the same time, Stelianos, and out of the Kure family, out of that mare, Athena. Right? I think that was the mare's name. And at one point, there were 3 brothers all racing at the same time. They were all geldings, and they would frequently run against each other. Stelianos was the best of them. There was Thanassi X, and there was, I'll look up the mare on a break. And it's just, it's very cool. And so yesterday when the two of them, it's tea time, when they hooked up and he's no lemon, and these are all Mr. Campbell's, produce. And of course, Midnight Tea Time has, you know, changed Barnes a while ago. I could sort of see it happening in slow motion. I go, look at this. The two brothers are going to end up, you know, down the stretch. And that's exactly what happened. Gail Cox invades from Canada, 50 to one shot. The Chad Summers winner I mentioned on Saturday with Benji jumping up. And it seemed like every single person that was betting needed the runner up, right? That's the impression that it looked like, and it felt like, you know, just seeing reaction around the internet. And it was pretty evident that everybody got stymied. Everybody needed Bricko, the Bond horse. And of course, Bond's running very well. And speaking of that, you had multiple winners. You know, between Chad and how about Carlos Martin? That was on Friday with two winners. Yesterday, David Donk, who does such a good job. Donk with three winners yesterday. And so a lot of cool things. And of course, part of that Friday story, the 50 to 1 shot of Gail Cox's, who, you know, say the word, you know, has been a quality horse, but it was still tough to. Even when you went back and looked and tried to figure out, you know, how this upset was authored, tough to make, honestly. And it was part of a sequence that ended up with one winner took down the pick five. You had a single winner for 600 and essentially 616,000 for the most, yeah, I mean, give or take, right? 615, 668, yeah. After takeout, over $700,000 in the pool. So see if that story emerges. And speaking of six-digit winners, I got to mention, I was following over the weekend, Horse Tourneys had the Spa and Surf Showdown. And congratulations to Scott Fiedler, who's from downstate. He wins what is believed, they think, is the largest ever online contest win, $232,000. It was really kind of fun to follow it. Scott Carson was recirculating, and we'll try to catch up this week. We got a bunch to do this week because we didn't get any conversations in last week on qualifiers, but Bill Ahlberg, John Hurd, Adam Eisner, Jorge Cruz Aiello, Jerry Freeman, Chris Couples, who we know, Pat Gianforte, James Politano, David Rouge, the top 10 in that two-day. It was a marathon. I tell you, it was a marathon. All the races from Saratoga and Del Mar both days. So just a eclectic and fun and you know, interesting weekend. And we haven't even talked any of the big specific stake winners. We won't. Ken McPeak tomorrow. He's tied on today. So we'll get Kenny tomorrow morning and get his reaction. Swiss Skydiver right now is staying actually in Saratoga. The initial reaction was that she would come right back to Kentucky. But now she's going to stay essentially another week, and there's a flight, and it seems like McPeak is, I guess the van driver got sick. So they didn't leave when they thought they were, and so she stays. Her performance, obviously, it bookends, really does. It bookends the two great mile and a quarter 3-year-old standards at Saratoga every summer when it comes to Travers in Alabama, and of course in reverse order this year. Swiss Skydiver came in and did exactly what Tis the Law did last week, which was just dominate and leave no question about anything and didn't provide an opportunity for any of the prospective upsetters and foes, etc., to intercede on her. What continues to be a very full, let's be honest. I mean, she is racing and she is running on a, you know, metronomic calendar. That's what, the seventh? I think that's her seventh start. And, you know, not that that's completely bizarre or unusual, but given what went on in the middle, you know, in the middle portion from, let's say, April, May, yeah, we lost essentially two good, you know, 8 to 10 weeks of the year. For her to have already run seven times, with, you got to figure, 2 to 3 more starts in the offing. It's great. And coming out of the Bluegrass, where she was valiant against Art Collector, she ends up with a triple-digit buyer in here, a 102, and a you know, glass ceiling number a little bit for the Daredevil daughter. And, of course, mentioning Daredevil, it's hard not to note that nothing elevates a stallion like being exported. It's just unbelievable. And obviously, so far, she's his best progeny. And, you know, she's going to the Oaks. There's no questions about it, and there shouldn't be any questions about it, because it's just not – it doesn't make any sense to even think, really, about Derby. If you want to, you know, mix that portion up, McPeak said, they, you know, let's go to the Oaks, and he'll discuss this tomorrow with us. But – I did not understand the minutes after the race. Well, she should absolutely come on. It's just why would you do that? Why would you do that? I mean, to run, you know, you could run another career best and be what, sixth? That is better than winning a Kentucky Oaks, going into the Kentucky Oaks at 8 to 5, 9 to 5. I don't even think. I mean, it's not a debate. And if she's a smash hit again in the Oaks, then you can, you know, then you can look to Baltimore and maybe think about Preakness. You know. So anyway, I don't get that. Of course, Tyler Gaffalione had the benefit of being on hand for this win, and he will give way to Brian Hernandez Jr., who gets back aboard on Swiss Skydiver for the Oaks. So Hernandez has got himself a pretty pat hand going into Oaks Derby weekend. Swiss Skydiver on Friday and Art Collector on Saturday. It's not so bad. Not a bad pairing. Well, we'll start to get that Oaks field put together, since we're on the hinting around, toward, Derby Oaks. We should mention the last of the point races as part of the stakes weekend recapping, and Pneumatic was being bet in that Pegasus in Monmouth was being bet like the race had already been run, and then ran like it, just drilled what felt like a very credible field. I mean, this was almost never in doubt. He came around and just was cruising. Arcan, that stretch out of Michael Pino, it was moving nicely, and you could see Jose Ferrar kind of had to start to ask, and Pneumatic just cruised by. I mean, Joe Bravo hadn't done anything. So at 4-5, pneumatic, 99 buyer for him in that Pegasus. And the early indications from Team Winchell is that they'll wait for Preakness with him. However, I asked Scott Blasey yesterday. Blasey said he was, you know, the horse was on the way back, and they would look him over, and they wouldn't completely rule out Derby. So we'll see. We'll see if there's more thoughts from the Asmussen camp, and the Asmussen camp has got to be thinking about 2021, because every couple of days there's another fabulous looking 2 year old coming out of the camp. We'll get to that, too. Unbelievable. But anyway, Pneumatic, your easy Pegasus winner. Jesus' team kind of came churning along to be second, and he is sitting really on the bubble right now. He's the bubble horse for Derby for Jose D'Angelo. And Arcan held third pretty easily because Super John just, you know, kind of clunked along to pick up the last major share. And I don't know if you saw, did you see the stat that I was just curious about Pino stretching out in stake races. So I on the formulator, I popped that in, and the answer came back. He'd done it 4 times. Sprints to routes in stakes. He had 2 wins and 2 other board hits. So now he's done it 5 times, and he's got 5 board hits, 2 wins, and 3 in-the-money finishes. So put that in the back of your mind. Pino stretching out in stakes. He clearly has an intent. And that Arcan's a nice horse. But, you know, ran nicely. You know, probably turn him back, but gave a solid effort. And we'll see what Jesus's team, what their thought is, because if Pneumatic bypasses Derby, well, then Jesus's team is absolutely in. And awaiting decisions, you heard Michael McCarthy with us last week, you know, Rushy, seeing what, you know, they're kind of feeling their way. And as Michael said, they're training as if he's running 10 furlongs. Then there's Storm the Court, who seems way more likely than he had been. And Peter Hurton saying 2 more works, but, you know, if there's no hiccups, he's running in Derby. So things have firmed up considerably. There are also the jock decisions that are starting to get locked in. There are some workouts that we'll talk about as the morning and the week progresses. If you didn't happen to catch Honor AP's work that Jay Pribman reported on, John Sheriff's giving him the Giacomo treatment. Starting to screw down on Honor AP, tightening all the bolts. And if you didn't see King Guillermo, who was just the weirdest situation coming in, Kevin Kirstein, the only video evidence of King Guillermo's work yesterday, under Miguel Mena. Mena is not riding. Sammy Camacho is coming in to get back aboard. But Mena, I'm sure they're thrilled, Villa, with how Miguel handled King Guillermo yesterday. He was zipping down that lane, and you could see he really wanted to go, but he didn't fight. And Mena had him, you know, under a nice hold, and then past the wire, 3 horses are out in front of him. And Mena, I mean, he didn't blink. He just knifes through the 3 of them and around the turn. I have no idea how to handle King Guillermo off of this interminable break. That's a very tough question. You know, because if people are building, you know, I think everybody's seemingly approaching this with the same mindset, you know, that the obvious major candidates are the obvious major candidates. And then there's the, you know, the exotic ticket builders. So plenty of good fodder on the Derby front already. And then there's the horses that are, you know, waiting on the outside as in some cases, like with Cheryl Spite, you're talking, you know, horses without any points potentially getting in. So we'll keep an eye on that, and we're waiting from decisions for decisions from some of the trainers, including Mark Cassie, who may have. Mark's going to join us this morning off of March to the Arches win in the King Edward. Josie Carroll is going to join us here shortly. She's going to join us first. Curlin's Voyage in the Woodbine Oaks. And I thought she won with authority. And congratulations to John Sikora and his partners on Curlin's Voyage winning the Woodbine Oaks. A really nice Curlin daughter. And it was a pretty good Saturday for the Hillendale organization, because Donato Lanny's horse, Clayton, a winner for Kevin Attard in the plate trial. Pink Lloyd, Pop Tiller, Pink Lloyd. That's, if you haven't seen Pink Lloyd's win, I mean, you know, you figure he was going to win, but he did it with aplomb. He came knifing through horses. Nice job, Rafael Hernandez. And since we're on this topic, I got to reach for Michael Dickinson, Theodora B. At a big price, in a six horse field, that was a nice number on the Ghost Zapper mare. And Dickinson has kept her good for an extended period. It was a hell of a weekend for Mrs. Weber, actually. March to the Arch on Saturday, and then yesterday, Super Escape, Trombetta, with Louis Contreras. Super Escape, I thought, was really good in the Seaway. That was a nice performance and actually got me off the duck on the beat pick. I haven't seen the numbers yet from the weekend, but it's been averaging 1,500, 1,600 a weekend, and we'll see. We'll get some of the qualification specifics. I'm sure some people were lined up yesterday to beat me on this bad Schneid. I had been 0-7, so it was nice to get that win yesterday. And we got three more weeks of qualifications, and then the final for a seat to Vegas. The rest of the Saratoga action, as we reach for Josie Carroll, the 2 3-year-old turf projects, the turf Tierra, the turf triple, the Derby domestic spending, and Chad. In fact, I reached for Chad. Chad tied up this week, but I think next week we'll sit down with Chad for a nice visit and catch up. I have not talked to Chad in ages. And domestic spending, this was a nice step forward in a oddly, the race did not unfold the way I think anybody expected, but you got a nice price on domestic spending. And then yesterday on the Philly side, Antoinette, 5-1, Johnny V and Bill Mott, and pretty nice weekend for Team Judmont, as they got a nice second behind Swiss Skydiver in the Alabama. Bonnie South. So nice weekend. Pair of top stake efforts for Judmont. We'll pause on some of the Saratoga news and some of the Saratoga results to go back up and talk more Woodbine. And we'll start it off with the Woodbine Oaks win that Josie Carroll authored with John Secura's Curlin's Voyage. Josie joins us now. Josie, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I know from exchanging notes with John, they just tickled to get a win like this. And, you know, she was going to be one of the choices no matter what, but they still have to go out and do it. Yep. Did we lose? No, there she is. Josie? I can hear her there. Josie?
Hello?
Yeah, Josie. You're not hearing us?
Hey there?
Case. Yeah, we're here. Casey, can you see what you can do with this?
I can hear you, but you're very tinny.
Ah, all right. Well, okay, Casey's going to call her back and get a better line. Hang on for a minute, Josie. We'll come right back to you. Curlin's Voyage, stretching back out in this spot, and this coming off of the win in the Fury. And before that, second in the Star Shoot. But as a two-year-old, you know, had finished the season in the Lassie with a win. And, you know, getting her kind of geared up, you could sort of see that Carroll was kind of spoon-feeding her, 6 furlongs, 7 furlongs, and then back out to a full route. And her first time, though, going 9 furlongs. So there was that, you know, there was that element to answer. And, boy, Patrick Husbands, if you got on board here, you had to be early. You had to be a little, you know, a little concerned with where he was. I mean, he kind of was languishing, and it turned out that, you know, it was part of the plan, it seems, because, you know, I don't think she'd been going 2 turns. I guess, she had never been really that far back in a route race. And in fact, in the Princess Elizabeth last October, she was well back, but she didn't win. She got beat by 5 that day. So here's Josie Carroll again. Josie, let's try one more time.
Good morning.
How you doing? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Josie, I was just saying as we waited to get you back, I early on in this, it seemed like Patrick was, you know, kind of languishing at the back of the pack. Was that part of the plan?
You know, we really were just going to see how the race unfolded and, you know, just have her in position. I didn't really expect to get stuck quite so far down in there. You know, it was her first 2-turn race of the year, really due to the stakes schedule being difficult due to all the you know, the COVID delays. So I really didn't want her to be left with too much to do. So I was a little concerned seeing her in there, but I knew she was going into this race in tremendous shape. She probably had the 2 best breezes of her life, her last 2 breezes. Not just the times, but the way she did it and how powerfully she galloped out. So, you know, I was really pretty confident wherever she came from, she was going to be strong.
Did the one hole, you know, obviously you're going to have the, you know, the ground saving potential when you draw the 1, but it's a bulky field at 10, and I was that of a concern going in?
You know, I don't think you ever like to come out of the 1 hole, but really, it's a long race, it's a mile and eighth. We had a long way to go, and, you know, certainly you've got plenty of room to get out of trouble if you're stuck in there.
Well, her development and the way in which you handled her, I was saying how, you know, you had spoon-fed her, you know, brought her back easy in the Star Shoot going 6 and then stretched a little bit to the Fury going 7, you know, but she had had that sequence last year, including her maiden breaker, mile and 70, and then the 3 mile and a 16th. So it was never, you know, it was never a question that she wasn't going to be effective going two turns. But still, you're stretching out a, you know, a full quarter of a mile from 7 to 9.
You know, I think we always knew that this was a route filly, and further the better. You know, as I said, the schedule was a little difficult this year. We had to make a choice. You know, you either go to 7/8 Fury and then have a good long run into the Oaks, or you went 3 weeks earlier in the Saline, and we've had some really, really hot summer here. I had a feeling that 3 weeks out we might take too much out of this filly to be coming into the key race. I had a long discussion with John Sakura about it, and you know, he was sort of on the same page. Let's go to 7/8 and train her into the Oaks and have a fresh horse.
Well, and that seems to have just been, you know, the perfect plan, and she now. I mean, hard not to consider, you know, one opportunity. She's already faced males twice in her career. And Josie, given the record of Oaks winners in the plate, you know, hard not to at least think about the plate.
Well, certainly, you know, we're very much about the individual. And if she bounces out of this well, you don't get very many opportunities to run restricted for $1 million, you know, so
yeah.
It's something we'd have to seriously consider. You know, the horses in the plate trial ran very well. There's, you know, the winner looks like a very nice horse, but the three of them at the wire had to run pretty hard, so my filly I think had an easier go of it, so I'm hoping that, you know, that would play to my advantage should I go that direction. But really, at this point, we just have to see how she comes out of the race and how the next couple of weeks unfold for her.
Well, and a confrontation between Curlin's Voyage and Clayton would be kind of funny, given Donato Lanny and John's relationship, and it would be. I think they'd have to make arrangements to have it be the Hill and Dale Queen's Plate, because it would be quite a confrontation. You talk about the filly's development, and you obviously had great confidence in her from early on, and you know, that included debuting against the boys last summer in the Victoria.
You know, I mean, as you said, she ran her first start against the Colts. I mean, this is a little different. This is the Mall of Florida. It's a little different. But this is just a really good filly. You know, I've been so fortunate to get so many nice, nice fillies out of the Hill and Dale program. You know, and they are all bred classically. They all want those classic races. So certainly it's what she's designed to do. And you know, we'll see. You know, again, it's very much about how she bounces out of this race. I mean, I will say, you know, she's playing walking around the barn today, which is a good sign. But once we get her back on the track, we'll have a pretty good idea of how much it took out of her.
This is your second Oaks win, right? Inglorious.
Sorry, what's that?
This is your second Oaks win, right? Inglorious was an Oaks winner.
She was, and you know, and again, we really didn't make up our minds till the last minute. But she—that was a filly that came out of the Oaks just like unbelievably well. I mean, she came out of that race so strong that I really was very, very confident putting her in the plate. So yeah, we just have to see. You know, they're very different horses, and just have to see how this plays out.
And if we're thinking about,
I'm not submitting right now. In other words, no,
there's no doubt, and you got plenty of time. That was your second. The potential is here for you to go after a third plate, right? Because Edenwald Edenwold was your
really,
first.
It would be a really exciting thing. I mean, you know, it's our big race here, and it means an awful lot to win a race like that. And it would be very exciting to do it, and to do it for these connections that have for many years been sending me horses. You know, and it would be really great for them.
Well, this one, the Curlin Filly, and out of a Stormy Atlantic mare, Atlantic Voyage, actually the second, this is the second stakes horse that Atlantic Voyage has dropped, and feels, I haven't seen a number. It feels like from a competition standpoint, and we haven't really seen what else is going to line up for plate. It'll be interesting to see how this race comes back. I have not seen a figure, Josie, for this race. All the Woodbine numbers were a little late coming out, but you got to think she broke through into the 90s with that effort.
Yeah, I'm really proud of this filly. So, you know, I think, you know, whatever direction we choose to go, she's got a very bright future.
Absolutely. And Josie, for the summer, the season, things seem, once Woodbine got going, things have been pretty smooth, and the racing's been very good.
Sorry, we have kind of a weak connection.
I hear you. Just saying, Josie, that the season at Woodbine feels like it's been really good. The racing, every I'm looking mostly on Saturdays and Sundays, but the racing has been excellent.
You know, I think we've got a really strong racing program up here. I think it's very much underappreciated, the kind of horses that are on the grounds up here and running in our better races. You know, they've worked really hard to put some money there for quality horses in the hopes of attracting, you know, better horses up here. And I think more and more owners are starting to realize that, it is a good place to race. And, you know, we do have a lot of stake opportunities for the fillies that come up here.
Speaking of the stakes, some thoughts about Mr. Ritz in the King Edward. We're going to talk to Mark Cassie next. And then, of course, yesterday, Painting seemed like the obvious major competitor for Super Escape yesterday.
Yeah, Painting really got stuck. She got stuck inside, had absolutely nowhere to go, and when she finally shook free, I mean, she was closing like a freight train. I think she's a two-turn filly, and 7/8, she can get it done, and I think she would have got it done yesterday had she broken loose, but I think truly she's a two-turn filly, and again with the stakes schedule being sort of all up in the air this year, it was a matter of you run or you wait a very long time in between, and I think when you have a horse that's spot on and doing well, you have to run.
This is also Hillendale, and this one feels like she's going to deserve a try on dirt, Josie. No. Some maybe a try on the main track on dirt.
Sorry, I apologize. I just can't hear you,
Josie. I was suggesting a dirt try for her. No good. All right, unbelievable.
Yeah, sorry, can't.
No problem, sorry. Josie. All right, I'm going to pull up. Josie, congratulations, and we'll look toward the plate. Josie Carroll, everybody, and
thank you very much.
No problem, Josie Carroll, and happy that nice weekend for Hillendale, and I. Well, you know what? This week we'll try to get John in here. Let's do this. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, Mark Cassie is going to join us, and we'll continue to fill out the weekend at Woodbine, as well as talk to Mark, who worked in Enforceable this morning toward the Derby, and actually, there are quite a few stake pieces to talk about. with Mark Cassie, including Hendy Woods midweek, right? And Indiana Grand won the Indiana Grand midweek. So I'll throw that in, and we'll touch on a few others. Mark Cassie next.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Learn the business of horses in the world.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Dolly America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 15 to the top of the hour. Mark Cassie is going to join us, and hopefully we got a clearer connection with Mark. After Josie Carroll joined us, and Mark didn't send anybody out. Norm did. Norm finished fourth in here with Mizenbow, who ran well at a big price, was only beaten about five lengths in the Oaks. Mark Cassie, though, had a busy day, and it included March to the Arch, marching past the pace setters. That was one of those races where the projected pace played out. And so often here at Saratoga, we're talking about how, you know, there should be a pace, but there isn't. There should have been a pace in the King Edward. There was, and March to the Arch went by them all and helped set up a great weekend for Live Oak. Mark Cassie joins us. Good morning. Congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks.
That to me, that was a big part of the pleasure of that performance, because on paper it said, okay, there's five horses here that are interested in the lead, and they actually went and there was plenty of pace, and it unfolded as expected.
Yeah, it worked out nice. You know, Raphael rode him really well. He's kind of a difficult horse to ride, and him and I talked about it. I guess that was Saturday morning, and you just kind of got to get him to settle and make a run, and you can't run too early. And I mean, it's just, he's not easy, but it worked out well.
This group, and this is, you know, King Edward's nice. This is a grade two, and I thought this was
the Woodbine Mile.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
it sets up beautifully. The one turn mile configuration, which is cool. I mean, to have the one turn grass mile, and for this horse now five, and he's a gelding, so you can just pick fun spots. And the last victory came in the restricted group at the beginning of the year in the Sunshine Millions. But of course the Wise Dan last year as well. This is a good win for him.
He's been very unlucky. I mean, he could have easily have won, two or three other races. He's been very unlucky. So we're going to leave him there. He's going to run in the Woodbine Mile. Of course, War Will's going there as well. And, it'll be interesting.
Still haven't seen a number from this race, Mark. And,
no, I know. I don't know what the holdup is. I've checked.
Yeah, I'm curious
myself. Maybe somebody went on vacation or something.
No, there's no vacations at Buyer Associates. And I can't imagine. It's one thing with main track. Usually, when there's trouble, it and there's confusion about a fig, and they mull it over. Usually it's on the main track and on dirt, not so much on turf, where the numbers
are. They're mulling over the dirt races yesterday at Saratoga, because I was looking to see what the Stone Street filly got, the impressive Medagliora filly won. And they gave the turf figs, but they hadn't given the numbers yet for the dirt.
I think
confusion reigns.
Well, all right. I'm glad you told me that, because I looked up a turf figure, and didn't realize that the dirt numbers weren't.
Published. I was looking at the Belmont, or the, I don't know what it's called now, the Oaks yesterday.
Yes.
Because I wanted to see what figure that got, because we have Henry Woods that I think is. Turning out to be a really good 3-year-old filly, turf filly, and I wanted to see how her number related to that race.
And I'm gonna bring up Hendy Woods, who got an 86 in the Indiana Grand, and that was speaking of which, let's slip that in. Delighted for Declan Carroll to win a stakes like that.
David being there, it was extremely gratifying and good. I mean, Declan's got a lot of talent, and I think as time goes on, everybody's going to get to see that. Been so unlucky. He was on a roll in New Orleans, with his bug, and got hurt, and then he started rolling again after he lost his bug in New Orleans, and then of course, the coronavirus hit, and it kind of just threw everything into a spin. But he's a wonderful young man and a great rider.
Well, and Hendy Woods in that spot, what would you, what you'd bring her to New York? Is that what you seem to be thinking about?
I'm going to have a conversation with Mrs. Banky here. Soon, whether we could stay and run at Churchill, I think is that the dog.
Turf.
Oh, the Edgewood. The Edgewood. It's some kind of wood.
It
or we also have the option of going to Kentucky Downs. you know, and they've got the Oaks there for a lot of money. Ultimately, I'm hoping if she continues to improve that, you know, maybe the Queen Elizabeth at Keeneland will be in her sights. We won that once. She's affiliates. I don't think you've seen the best of her yet. She's getting better and better.
Well, between March to the Arches win and earlier in the week, some other performances that we should mention, and stay at Woodbine on Saturday for a second, because Olympic runner, that was a surprisingly tight and exciting running of the Bold Venture, and it took a pretty heroic effort from Pink Lloyd to win that race, but Olympic Runner seems like finding the way.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. Kimura kind of got stuck behind, you know, I don't blame him. He was following, I always want to call him Pink Floyd, but Pink Lloyd, right? Following him, and he got kind of hung up for a second, and it would have been, he ran a big race. It would have been interesting because he came flying.
He seems to be, he's four now. He's a gelding for Gary Barber. And it seems, Mark, like he is making some progress at this point.
Yeah, he's one of those horses that I always thought he was all right as a three-year-old. And you know, we gave some time to and just tried to let him grow up, and you know, with hopes that he would become a better four-year-old, similar to like the Teppans and the World Approval and Got Stormy. And you know what, he has, he's matured. I'm not putting him in that category right now, but he's a horse that is definitely on the improve.
You also, on Saturday, before we talk some other spots, Muskoka Giant breaks the maiden at the end of the card, and Our Secret Agent with a nice allowance win.
Yeah, she's another one. She's kind of interesting. I can't think of her sister's name, but she's a sister's bred by Mr. Tackett. She's won almost $1 million. And she's won that race at Presque Isle twice, I believe, the $400,000. I can't think of her name right now, but I said to Gary, we were running this filly on the dirt, and I said, you know, her sister's a multiple graded stakes winner on Topeda.
Oh, the Mac Robertson filly.
Yeah, yeah. I said, maybe we should try this filly on Topeda. And yep. We sent her up, and you know, you saw a drastic improvement right from the beginning. It's amazing. People don't realize, Steve, that where, you know, there's truly three different surfaces. We've got dirt, we've got the grass, and then we have Topeda. Actually, we have a few different surfaces on dirt. It just doesn't look like it. You know, it's
sure.
Dirt can be so different. As can grass. So many people, you know, with grass, it's not just the grass, but a lot of times, you know, a lot, say, like a Churchill with the sharper turns versus, say, Belmont or Woodbine. We have a huge difference in the Woodbine, whether you're on the outer turf or the inner turf. You know, and people don't look at it. I don't think they pay as much attention. Turf is not just turf. The circumference of the racetrack can be a big
no
factor
doubt.
As well.
No doubt. You know? We see it at Saratoga with how tight the inner turf is. And some horses, especially coming out of, we've got one, coming out of Belmont, where it's such a gradual, even the inner turf at Belmont is gradual by the, you know, sheer size of the place. And at Saratoga, you better have a good cornering horse to get around there, because
I think a lot of times, how many times have you and I seen horses that you think are going to be, you know, do well at Woodbine, that have had luck on the shorter, you know, turns, and then come to to Woodbine and not run any good. It's definitely a different setup.
Well, Hotshot Anna is who we're thinking of.
Yeah, that's it.
That took me. I knew you were referring to it. I couldn't, and I knew it was Mac Robertson's nice trap shot mare. But there we go, Hotshot Anna. How about the maiden winner? What about Muskoka Giant?
I don't know about that horse. I mean, he won. He's been just an underachiever. He's the most beautiful horse you ever want to see. I don't know. I mean, I thought he would win that race fairly easy the other day, and he struggled to win. I don't know. That horse has been frustrating to me. So I don't know.
Well, we'll leave him as an open question mark. A couple of others, though, we should mention: Make Mischief with a good second in the Adirondack. And while on paper it might not look like our Flash Drive, you know, out of the money yesterday in that very important looking maiden special, but that actually was a pretty nice. I thought a nice try.
Yes, you know what? She's another one that's been disappointing to me so far. Trained extremely well. I'm not sure, as I told Mrs. Weber last night, I'm not sure she's got a great fondness for the Saratoga course. We'll see that year after year after year where you'll see horses that will struggle over that track and then go other places and do well. When we had her down at Belmont and even at our training center in Ocala, I just kind of thought she was a little better. The horse that ran well at Woodbine that I think could have a bright future is Super Munnings yesterday. She's a filly that just got beat first time out, finished second, belongs to Mrs. Weber. We bought her out of the OBS sale, and she's beautiful. She was only up at Woodbine for about maybe two and a half weeks. We sent her right up from the training center, so we'll see. We're getting ready. We have some young horses that we're getting ready to run soon that I think were little. Hopefully, you'll do well. It's been an interesting and a slow year so far. Not really sure why, but it's just good old 2020.
Yeah, you can chalk it up to a difficult year. But
bad.
You know, you're getting the now and the interruption and. The way in which, you know, timings, the way people have approached things, it's definitely been a wrinkle. And when you had certain things in mind and certain goals and so forth, everybody, has adjusted. And so it's not, it shouldn't be
too
surprising.
And I talked about it a little bit. In the roundtable discussion, in a normal year, we struggle to run some of our better horses because there's just not the races. The races don't go, and this has even been a bigger struggle this year because now our racing season has been so condensed that we haven't ran the maiden races that we normally would have ran, not the numbers, the same thing, with the one other than. And so it's been extremely difficult to get a good pattern in racing pattern into some of our horses, which I find difficult, So, look, in the scheme of things, I'm not here crying about it. It's not, in the scheme of things, with what's going on with the world, our little issues are meaningless, but it's just made things a little more difficult, which is fine. And we're the lucky ones. Our sport has adapted and done a super job.
Yes.
In today's world, and we're fortunate to be where we are. And I think I'm not sure that some of our racing management gets enough credit for what they've went through. Woodbine's done just a tremendous job to get their program going, because it's a little more difficult. The Canadian government is a little more difficult. I mean, New York's done such a great job, and what would we have done without Florida? And the Stronach group pushing so hard to keep racing going on in Florida. So it's been interesting.
You mentioned the roundtable. We're going to talk to Matt Hegarty next, and Matt will flesh out some of the Jockey Club roundtable conversation yesterday. But you were part of it, and one of the most I don't know if you want to call it predictable, but certainly there was a natural harmony to some things that you said that instantly were reflected in. In the thing you talked about, which was pretty funny. You mentioned the social media, the potential for social media to castigate and get up in arms about certain decisions when it comes to running horses, and then right on cue after you said that and it was reported, the social media was up in arms over what you said.
Oh, really? Luckily, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to social media. So I haven't really seen all the negativity. So I follow very few people. I don't tweet very often. And, I don't indulge in that.
Well, talk about what the essence of that portion of the roundtable was trying to communicate in terms of the care and maintenance of horses under a whole different overwrap when it comes to people viewing the industry and what the game is. Virtually anybody has the ability now to critique, and as a result, it feels like in some cases there's disproportionate responses to some things that people may not fully understand, and it's also difficult to discern whose response is reasonable and intelligent and measured and coming from a basis of understanding versus screeds. So it's a bit of a cacophony in that regard.
It is, and that's why I don't get too involved in it. Lots of opinions, so little knowledge many times. So I said things, and I knew when I said them that it was going to make some people unhappy, but I think I've earned my stripes.
So. Sure. Well, we had this, and you referenced that, right? You referenced the clenbuterol discussion, which was very well received. So it's not as if, you say things to get a rise out of people. I mean, you're speaking from experience and from the heart about the topics.
All I know is that I live it every day, 7 days a week, from early morning to late at night. And the people that want to question me or want to throw stones, but I doubt they've done as much as I've done and lived as much as I've lived. So, again, I'm not looking to start any battles, and I tell it the way it is.
And that is worth having, to very much worth having, to have, you know, people, Graham, another, you know, another horseman that is just going to say what he thinks and not, you know, be worried about who responds in what way. Before I ask you about some upcoming debuters and maybe some of those young horses that are coming forward, let's get an update on Derby and Enforceable, who's being mentioned regularly, Mark, as a, you know, late running type that, you know, could, you know, potentially be a part of exotic tickets at the very least.
Yeah, well, you were at the beginning of the show, you were mentioning about how so many times we look at races and say, look, there should be a ton of speed, and
right,
and it ends up not happening. If you look at the Derby, you sure would think there's going to be a pretty quick pace, which would be nice for us. We worked Enforceable this board in 5/8 out of the gate, and we worked them with another horse that belongs to Mr. Oxley. I feel bad for him, but Ghost Fighter, but he's kind of his workhorse, his workmate, and Declan was on Ghost Fighter, and we told Declan to kind of hustle away from the gate, and the Biscuit was on, Adam was on Enforceable. I asked Adam to let him settle and come with a big finish, and I think they caught him like the last eighth of a mile in 11-4. Worked really well, settled off the horse, worked nice, and so he's training extremely well. But it'll, you know, he definitely will need some pace to be effective.
You mentioned earlier off air chance that you've got a decision for a rider later today.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Mr. Oxley today, and we'll talk about how the work went, and then we'll make a decision probably today who's going to ride him. We'll see. Like I said, it's something that I want to talk over with Mr. Oxley.
All right, we will we'll watch the wire service. What's your feel for the situation and how the Derby and the way in which, you know, the decisions are coming down, and you know, the jock is much complication for you if some of the riders, particularly from New York, can't come in or choose not to come in?
Well, I think it's pretty well set now, and again, just welcome to 2020. It's, you know, it's something that is a bit of an inconvenience, but look, we're fortunate we're going to have a Kentucky Derby.
Sure.
And Churchill Downs and has worked, and the government have worked very hard to get this thing to go. So whatever this is, you know, whatever needs to be done will be done. And yeah, look, we're running the Kentucky Derby on September 5th. Is that in itself tells you something.
Well, and we're looking forward to seeing, you know, how this field. I've been trying to track things, watching for decision making, and the next Cassie related decision will come for a rider for Enforceable. And Mark, let me ask you before I ask about some of the maidens, particularly. Gretzky the Great, out of that at the beginning of August. What's next, and what are your thoughts?
He runs in the Soaring Free on the 23rd, at Woodbine. It's a prep for the summer stakes. So
nice.
Yeah, that's what we're doing with him.
And what do you think? Some thoughts about?
I think he's a nice horse. I mean, he's got to, you know, he's going to need to step up his game a little bit, but I like him. Pretty horse, great moving horse, and we've been high on him all along. We're going to run another horse that I like a lot. Maybe probably a first time starter called Dolder Grand. Belongs to the Greens. We bought him out of the OBS sale. He's by, yeah. Can't think of it now. We paid a lot of money for him, $800,000.
Wow.
And I like him a lot as well. He may need a little bit more ground, so we're going to probably run him as a first-time starter in there.
Give us, say the name again. It's a little tough to
remember. Dolder Grand. D-O-L-D-E-R Grand. It's named after a really nice hotel that Mr. Green stayed at.
Very
at
nice.
One point in time. I mean, he's by Candy Ride.
There we go. All right, it's coming together. Yeah. Tell us a little bit. Let's look at some of the horses coming out this week. And, in fact, at Ellis on Friday in the first and the fourth, Seize It and La Liberté.
Yeah, both horses just kind of getting ready, trying to get a start into them so far. They've just kind of been horses. So, you know, we like to run them and let the chips fall where they do. And both have just kind of been average horses at this point in time.
How about Upstart Gentleman on Saturday at Ellis?
He'll need to improve. You know, we're going to run him a little farther. It looks like we're not the only one in there. There's a lot of expensive horses that kind of were not spectacular necessarily in their first starts. You know, at this point in time, see, these horses, at some point, you've done all you can do with them as far as training goes, and you got to run them, and you run them, and you figure out from there, you know, what they want to do. It's the start of putting the puzzle together.
I want to ask, too, about an allowance runner at Saratoga, Lashara.
Yeah, she was a bit, you know, she was a little disappointing, obviously, in the stake last time. I don't know if it was a little too far for her. The pace ended up, you wouldn't have thought, but maybe it was a little quick. I don't know. She's come back and trained well. Like I said, disappointed. Hopefully a better performance.
Well, and you mentioned War of Will. Nothing got a start before the coming at all
no,
before
well,
the
no,
we're
gonna
going to train right up
into huh. We're going to go straight into the Woodbine Mile. One thing I think since last time we talked, obviously, you know, his stallion career has been planned, and we're delighted that he's going to go and stand beside his father at Claiborne.
Very nice. Nice. That's right. That did come out. And also, you made me think of Tap It to Win. We almost skipped over mm-hmm. after the nice try in the Jerkins.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do with him is we're probably going to come back in the Amsterdam. So we're going to even cut him back even a little shorter. And then that will probably be it for him for the year. He's going to go into that category, hopefully, that we talked about earlier with the Godstormies and the Teppans. And that is, go ahead, send him home, let him grow up, and hopefully come back with a really good four-year-old.
Very nice. And it did, I mean, it really felt like the cutback was, you know, was natural for him. It was the right, you know, the right maneuver.
He really ran well. You know,
yeah.
Obviously we thought in the race that we didn't want to let Tom's colt get too far ahead of us. and no parole. And then it turns out we were probably a little too close to no parole. The pace was pretty quick. And but we were one of the only, I think we may have been the only horse that was around early that stayed around at all late. So I was proud of him for that. And like I said, I prefer, for the most part, not to run my three-year-olds against older horses, and opportunities are getting to be, you know, smaller and smaller. So I think we'll probably try this and then go from there.
And one more, because I kind of had followed her, and Lady Grace out of that Royal North win.
Yeah, she's gotten good, that filly. There's another one that we gave a break to, and she's come back now to be a much better horse. There's not a whole lot for her right this second. So we're just sitting chilly right now.
Well, the funniest thing about Lady Grace, we talked right before then, and I forget what, I'm not going to remember what, you know, what the wins were, but there was one for Gary, and there had been, you know, a couple of others, and you said, now I've got to get one for Tracy Farmer, and then days later,
I said to myself, right? The way, you know, we have such a wonderful, wonderful group of owners. So you're like, you know, you're always wanting to win for each one of them, and to have something big happen. And Tracy had went through a dry spell. Of course, 2019 was unbelievable for him. And so it's been a little sluggish. So that was nice. It was nice to get.
Well, and of course, I in the Sky ran a good second in there to her.
She did. She did. She's a horse that is, you know, she's her own worst enemy. She gets herself in a lot of jams, and but does have some talent.
Mark Cassie, everybody, and things feels like things are starting to knit and come together for the barn at the last third of the year, and two-year-olds starting to come out on a regular basis. There's some maiden winners, too, from, there's even a couple of others from Woodbine we could probably talk about. But, Mark, I appreciate it and appreciate the frankness yesterday in the round table. And we'll see you at Churchill.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
Always great. Day. Mark Cassie. And, I mean, there's always a hatful of things to talk about with Mark. And there were a couple of other maidens, but if he didn't bring them up, then you know, he'll bring them up you know, unaided like Dolder Grand. We got Matt Hegarty's going to join us next, and let's take a look. Let's see where the Dolder Grand. There it is. This looks like a European. This is obviously a European. It's in Switzerland. How about that? Wow! Look at that. That is gorgeous. Wow. Yeah, I'll tell you what. This looks, including the circuitous drive up to what is essentially a castle, and there is in Quebec, on the Saguenay, there is a, I want to say it's a Four Seasons. Is it a Four Seasons or a Ritz? I think it's a Four Seasons. Very similar to this. It kind of a castle-like setting, a fort, essentially, on the top of a bluff overlooking the Saguenay, and in fact, the harbor where whales come to spawn. And this instantly reminds me of it. There's a gorgeous, they've got a casino there, too. The thing is literally like a set out of a Bond film, as this is the Dolder Grand.